Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Pam Bondi is President-elect Donald Trump's new choice for attorney general. The announcement coming hours after former Congressman Matt Gaetz withdrew his name from consideration. CBS's Jake Rosen has more on Trump's latest choice.
After leaving the role of attorney general in Florida, Bondi turned her attention to national politics, working as a legal advisor in Donald Trump's first term, and was a defense attorney for Donald Trump during his 2020 impeachment trial. She was also a surrogate for Trump's most recent campaign, advocating on behalf of the RNC and, quote, election integrity.
CBS's Scott McFarland says it's possible that Matt Gaetz could wind up back in Congress.
There is a pathway, because he did win the election in November for that same seat in Florida come January 3rd. And according to House sources speaking with CBS News, the paperwork has been submitted up to the clerk of the U.S. House by Florida. No special election has been called to succeed him, so if he chooses to take that seat, it's still available to him. In fact, one congressional source joked to me today, the only thing he'd sacrifice is he gets the worst office space, because they've already given out all the office space to the members-elect from elsewhere in the country.
A woman told police she was sexually assaulted in 2017 by Pete Hegseth in a California hotel room, according to a recently released detailed investigative report. Hegseth, who has been busy shoring up support on Capitol Hill after being named by President-elect Trump for defense secretary, tells reporters.
As far as the media is concerned, I'll keep this very simple. The matter was fully investigated and I was completely cleared.
The International Criminal Court issues arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, as well as Israel's former defense minister and a Hamas leader who Israel claims was killed in an airstrike. The charges include crimes against humanity in the war in Gaza and using starvation as a method of warfare. More from CBS's Elizabeth Palmer in Tel Aviv.
The warrants may increase international pressure on Benjamin Netanyahu to, say, improve the delivery of humanitarian aid in Gaza, something that is under consideration now as aid agencies have been ringing the alarm bells. There's just not enough aid making it into Gaza now, and some of the trucks that do get across are being looted.
A study published in The Lancet confirms racial and geographic health disparities in life expectancy over the past 20 years. Dr. Laura Dwyer Lindgren at the University of Washington says Asian Americans were found to have the longest lifespans.
Life expectancy for the Asian population pretty steadily increased from 2000 to 2019, and then it did decline, and substantially so in 2020, but it rebounded slightly in 2021.
This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Another victory for the Bucks. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks beat the Bulls 122-106 at Fiserv Forum. Giannis Antetokounmpo scored 41 points.
The pace that we're playing with is incredible so far, but we got to keep on going. I think the last maybe 6, 7, 8 games we've been playing good. We could have easily be 5 in a row right now.
The Bucks have now won 4 of their last 5. They host the Pacers tomorrow night. NFL, the Packers worked out getting ready to host the San Francisco 49ers Sunday afternoon. Defensive back Jaire Alexander unable to practice due to that knee injury he suffered against the Jaguars 3 weeks ago. The Badgers traveled to Nebraska to take on the Cornhuskers Saturday, both teams with overall records of 5 wins and 5 losses.
With a few weeks left in the season, we don't kind of look at the state of the union and where we're at. We just always look at day-to-day and how do we continue to push our guys to get better so that your best is on Saturday, and that's where we get into these last few weeks of the season.
That's Badgers head coach Luke Fickell with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Wicked's weekend is here, and Wicked and Gladiator have high hopes for a box office splash. Wicked is expected to be the box office winner, with Universal Studios hoping for a $100 to $110 million opener. Paramount is hoping Gladiator 2 pulls in about $65 million, which would be a healthy start for a film that cost $250 million to make. Even those healthy estimates would have this twosome fall short of Barbenheimer's opening weekend, which pulled in $235 million a year and a half ago. Actress Rosemarie DeWitt recently appeared on the the Drew Barrymore Show and said her husband, Ron Livingston, was so despised for his role as Jack Berger on Sex and the City that he couldn't even walk in New York City without rabid fans yelling and screaming at him. Ironically, when Livingston wanders through an office, he gets constant reminders about his TPS reports. Guy can't catch a break. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A cloudy sky tonight and a little breezy, a low in the mid-30s. And for tomorrow, cloudiness continues, highs into the low 40s. For the upcoming weekend, it stays dry and mostly cloudy. A high around 40 on Saturday, mid-40s for Sunday. It's 42 right now.
Dom Salvia.
Next time, Donald Trump has picked his new candidate for U.S. Attorney General, Pam Bondi, a former lobbyist for Qatar. Will she last longer than the Gates? Tune in.
The Dom Salvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Matinee on Air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Show. I'm your special guest host, Tom Palswitz. We're going to have a great guest coming on in a minute here, but we did want to jump over to Tom, who on the phone, who's been waiting very patiently. So, Tom, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've been wondering, I've been thinking about why the Democrats lost, and I think there's a lot of reasons, but I think one reason that's not really been talked about is the abortion issue. And Kamala talked about it quite a bit, and how she, you know, how she wanted to make things better and, you know, get the laws back to what they had been. I don't think that's a winning strategy. And what I mean by that is that I know there's a lot of people who are not pro-abortion and never will be. So I think the Democrats need to come to a middle point somehow with the right and be more pro-life, maybe not as far as the right is, but more pro-life, including adoption. I have some friends who adopted 6 children, and it costs them like $20,000-$30,000 for each one. So I would like to see the Democrats become more open to working with the right on that issue and finally resolving. And I think that by doing that, it would take that issue away from the Republicans and give the Democrats a more fighting chance to win.
Well, I appreciate the thoughts, Tom. Thanks for calling in. So just a quick note on that. I think there was quite a few referendums and initiatives across the country when it came to defining timelines on abortion that got an overwhelming support in a lot of areas. But there were a lot of voters who voted for abortion rights and Donald Trump at the same time. And I think that's one of those things I took away from this last election, that people care about abortion, but there's something else going on that led them down to Donald Trump. So appreciate the call, Tom. Thank you very much. Want to introduce my next guest. He is State Senator Chris Larson. So I've known Chris for a while. He was very gracious when I decided to run and helped me understand the lay of the land when it came to what it all meant. He's been in Madison for a while. I think he's seen some up and down changes, which we'll definitely talk about. But the other part is he is a fellow UWM Panther. So, Chris, welcome to the show.
Go Panthers.
Go Panthers.
Thanks for having me, Tom. Yeah, it's a, I was literally just down there. I'm always down at UW-Milwaukee, and, you know, I feel like no matter how old I get, I always feel like there's going to be a professor that pumps up from around the corner and be like, aren't you supposed to be in class? What are you doing out there?
Yeah, I don't have that fear because most of the professors I had are no longer there. So I think they probably,
you still run into it. Well,
they probably retired. I think the last one that was there when I was there was Mr. Fisher, who taught higher level accounting. And I think he just recently retired. So
still a few. There's still a few. When the professors are a lot younger than me, there's a few of them. Then it's like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, thanks for having me on. I know you were just talking about the election, and I do want to say that up front, you know, as people are everyone's doing their analysis, and we do the American tradition that the side that lost, no matter how close it was, no matter how many of the other factors are involved, that they're like, well, throw out the baby and the bathwater and everything else. And if you don't start over completely, like, you know, what are you doing?
Yes.
Obviously, in a very close election, there's all different types of things that affect it. But I do want to say the good thing, like the things that did work in Wisconsin is what we did in the state Senate. We were able to elect 4 new Democrats to the Wisconsin State Senate, which is not something we usually get a chance to say. And it means we're on the path of being able to get to the majority in the Wisconsin State Senate for the first time in 16 years.
Yes. So very exciting.
Big stuff, big deal. Yes.
It's not only 4. It's 4 out of 33, which I think when you think about it, that's a huge swing. Yeah. And the same thing happened on the assembly side. There were 10 seats that flipped on the assembly side. And when you think about Wisconsin, the last 3 presidential elections have been razor thin. And yes, to have that big of a swing, Chris, what do you attribute that to?
I mean, the fact that we had fairer maps for the first time in, gosh, 12 years. So 12 years ago was when the first maps went into effect, the gerrymandered ones. These are the ones that Republicans basically set it. So no matter what happens at the top of the ticket, which, you know, in Wisconsin usually means it's going to be a 50-50 election. It's going to be super close. But of course, they didn't want to have a 50-50 legislature because there's a chance they don't end up being the one with the gavel, you know, deciding what bills move forward and who gets ignored. So they rigged the maps so that they would have about 2/3 of the votes. And that's what they had in our state Senate. They had 2/3, even though we're 50-50 at the top of the ticket. They had 22 of the 33. And then in the assembly, it was pretty much that equivalent, 63 of the 99. So stacked, right? Not close to 50-50. This is like, it's the equivalent. You know how, like, if you have kids, and you know you have kids, you end up, you know, saying, okay, the fairest system is one cuts the cookie.
Right.
And the other one picks.
The other one chooses. Yeah. Yep.
This is the equivalent of, like, they get to cut the cookie and then they get to keep which side they want. So it was 2/3. Yep. That seems fair.
Yeah. And I know that fight, and I know a lot of you listening were in on that, is, you know, it's I call it the battle for democracy because, and I love the way you said it, Chris, fairer maps. They're not the fairest maps we could have, but they're fairer. Right. But it does. I mean, we're a purple state. I think everything that shows is that every single, either statewide or federal election, they're going to be tight. They're going to be close. And that's the way the assembly should play out. And that's the way the state Senate races should play out. But I know Robin Voss was he was proud of being able to say, you know, our people who run are the best, and that's why they're chosen. And I haven't seen any really good quotes from him about what happened. Otherwise, to say that, you know, the Democrats were talking about getting a majority and they didn't, and therefore the people rejected them, which is, once again, I like to call that political theater. But what ramifications will this election have on the ability to come together to start solving some issues?
Yeah, I mean, I hope that we do. But again, you still have Robin Voss. I think they're going to elect him as their leader again. And just to be clear, you're right. These are not fully fair maps. These are the Republican maps. The Republicans voted for these. No Democrat. I think maybe 1 or 2. But these are largely the Republicans that carried these maps forward because they were the best for them. Hence, 50-50 election, they still have 54 of the seats in the assembly. So they didn't lose their majority or get it close to 50-50. I do hope that we actually have a chance to get stuff done. I met with another senator yesterday to talk about bills regarding healthcare affordability and making sure that our hospitals actually earn their nonprofit status, which isn't the case right now. They end up getting more of a benefit that they give out to the community, which,
yes,
you know, by most people's definition of what a nonprofit is supposed to be, that's not it. And they haven't been doing that for years, and they've been giving the cash to executives and operating like a corporation. If they want to do that, they have to pay taxes like a corporation. So that's a big one, moving up nursing ratios or establishing nursing ratios minimums so that we actually, you walk into a unit knowing that you're going to be covered, or your parents are going to be covered. But I digress. There's opportunity for a bunch of different bills to actually move forward if common sense reigns. If that's going to happen anywhere, that's going to be in the state Senate. So we'll see. I mean, the Robin Voss, he's probably going to block a lot of stuff, but that doesn't mean we're not going to try.
But aren't there enough people who are sitting in a district now where they're not guaranteed reelection, and yes, they're going to now have to bring back some results to their constituents. So their constituents go, okay, because I've always felt, and we've talked about this a lot, but I've always felt like you should run on ideas, you should get reelected on results. And we haven't had that here in Wisconsin for a long time. It's been running as a party and then rerunning as a party. And now I think there's an opportunity here because it doesn't take that many senators and or assembly people to be able to say, wait a minute, I need to work on that issue because it's important to my constituents. And healthcare, I think, is one of those. You know, I'm on the ACA. So, you know, because I'm a small business owner, there's no place else for me to go to get healthcare coverage. And that's what I have to do to be able to figure that out. What are the chances of Medicaid money actually coming into Wisconsin in the next couple of years?
We're doing the Medicaid expansion.
Yes.
I mean, we should always pick that fight because it's one of the easiest fights to win. And the logic on the other side, it doesn't make any sense. We literally pay more money to cover less people. And there's federal dollars that are being just sitting there going to other states. If we decide, we're like, oh, no, let us spend because we would rather have our taxpayers cover this bill. Like, you know, imagine that in a restaurant situation, if they're like, oh, yeah, no, this is covered. There's a coupon that makes sure that this is actually taken care of by the federal government the same way they cover everyone else. You can cover more people that way. But we actually cover less people and pay more for it than if we would have expanded it. So it really literally doesn't make any sense. And it brings more money. It frees up money that we're spending on that we could be spending on public education, on improving our natural environment, on, you know, you name it, to the tune of over $1 billion now over the last 10 years that we've dragged our feet. So hope springs eternal. We always bring that one up. If you're up for a fight and bringing it up, I'm up for a fight and bringing it up.
Excellent. Because I think it needs to be brought at least to back into the swing of things for people to be able to say, wait a minute, how many of my constituents are covered by the ACA? Because right now it's called the Affordable Care Act, but I call it the Accessible Care Act because for some people it's not affordable. And, you know, and premiums keep going up and things keep changing. And I think it's good to take a step back and go, okay, we've made it accessible. Now we need to make it affordable so people get better health care and actually get healthier. So,
yes, absolutely. Making sure those plans on there are actually things that cover the needs that you have.
Exactly.
Yes, absolutely. That's the route that we should be going. And I think that, you know, if folks are listening to your show, there's a pretty good chance they're in tune with politics and how it's been operating over the last 10 years. And there's been what has been common knowledge and has been true is like that political gravity doesn't work, that like lobbying doesn't work, that public pressure, that they can just ignore it. There was a famous quote from the Republicans when they passed their gerrymandered maps. You might remember it, ignore the public comments. And that has been their mantra. But now they've shown like two of the most powerful Republicans in the legislature, both of them on the Joint Finance Committee, both of them among the richest members of the state Senate, were defeated 2 weeks ago, right? And so all of their colleagues are looking around and saying, wait a second, if these two folks who had been operating with, you know, just doing whatever they wanted are suddenly gone, they might want to think twice about ignoring the bills that Democrats bring up. By the way, less than 5% of Democratic bills get a hearing and less than 1% have passed over the last 10 years. So I'm expecting that ratio to change.
And that would, I think that to me is one of those litmus tests that people can watch and see if things are really changing. That should be a way to say, all right, more bills are coming to see the light of day and things are happening. So got to take a break. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show with your guest host, Tom Palzowitz.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. Today I'm going to share a story about me and my money. This starts in my 20s when I was what I will call an avoider. I was an avoider because I just felt like I was bad at money. You know, I didn't want to think about money. I didn't want to do anything with money except make it and spend it and close my eyes and pray that the rent check would cash. I spent a few years beating myself up about not paying attention to my money until I started having a very short money meeting with myself every month. And those meetings taught me that with a little bit of effort, I could be on top of my money. I could know when it was coming and I could know where it was going. And eventually, I was able to make plans for it. So if you're stuck in the avoider trap, hey, I know what it's like. Invite yourself to a money meeting. I promise you it'll pay off. For more money tips, check out workmoney.org. Till next time, this is Carrie Joy saying, take good care.
It's the sound of a soda, considered one of the coolest things made in Wisconsin. Jolly Good has been around since the 1960s. Cryer Foods makes it in Random Lake, which is in Sheboygan County. But Cryer started as a canning company in 1913. What was being canned there? Sauerkraut? Peas? Beets? The answer coming up.
At Jolly Good, we believe in quality.
Soda turned into an important revenue stream when production at the canning company slowed in the colder months. So what was being canned there? Sauerkraut, peas, beets? All three, plus juice, soups, and more. By the 1960s, Cryer quit canning and went all in on Jolly Good soda.
For flavor and value, Jolly Good's got it.
The latest resurgence of Jolly Good makes it a slice of Wisconsin for yesterday and today. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, the Valley's home of Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back. This is the Maggie Dawn Show and your guest host, Tom Palzowitz, with my special guest, Chris Larson, State Senator Chris Larson. I do want to touch on, we did get a text from one of our listeners about the last segment, and they are opposed to what we were talking about. And I won't go into the details about what they said. But part of it is it's an understanding of what it really means and how do you break through the fear of what they think is going to happen if somebody goes to the wrong bathroom. But I won't touch on that subject anymore. Chris, another question for you. One of the things I've been thinking about is what are the biggest issues statewide that you think can get tackled in this next legislative session? What are the biggest things statewide you think that can actually get some movement on? Of all the issues there are, there's a ton.
There's a lot. Yeah, no, there's a lot. I would say the biggest one that I think that we can change and frankly, we need to change is how we're funding public education in the state. It has been repeatedly cut over and over. And there was all kinds of excuses. Originally, it was cut under Doyle in 2009's budget when there was a huge $7 billion deficit that they were facing.
Right.
Walker came in, he cut it even more, $526 per pupil. That was per year. And that took years to be able to restore. And actually, if you account for inflation, we still haven't gotten there yet.
Right.
And if you account for the losses in between, we're about $3,000 behind per pupil. And even in the last budget, there was a minuscule increase, that didn't cover for all the years that we missed. So if I was going to say one specific, it would be the public education parity, specifically about making sure that public schools are getting the same amount of money for special education reimbursement that voucher schools are getting. Voucher schools get 90% of their costs if they add them up and send it in. They can actually get more than that, but that's an aside. It's on paper. They get 90%. Public schools, it was 31%. It was supposed to go up to 33%, but you know what? There's a report that just came out this week, Tom, and it's actually going to, and they have patted themselves on the back. It went up.
Yes.
It went up. Turns out, no, because they didn't put dollars in something called sum certain. They put in a set amount. And so because more and more schools are drawing off of those funds, the number's actually going to drop, not from 31 that it was at, but down below 30. So, and that means every public school that's covering special education has to pull those dollars, 70%, from other areas of study. So they're shortchanging our kids. Property taxes are going up as a result. You've seen a explosion of referendums all over the place over this. You're going to continue to see that until the state steps in and fulfills their obligation to fund every child with a quality public education. And we've got the funds to do it, $4 billion surplus. And we're spending over $800 million annual on a second outside education system that's less accountable, the voucher system. So we have the money to be able to fund every child, make sure they have a quality education, and we don't have an excuse not to do it anymore.
Exactly. But Chris, what do you say to the people who criticize spending more money with, you know, if we're not getting results for the money we're already spending, why would we put more to it? What do you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, if you don't want to fund education, you're funding ignorance, right? And this is like anything else. If you're saying, oh, this doesn't work, that think of that in any other form of just logic. Oh, my car is not working right now. I guess I'm going to cut funding to it.
Yes. Doesn't work. Right.
Oh, the Packers, that they're not able to, well, Packers are doing great, so I won't poo-poo them. But the Brewers are not able to have the lineup. You know, what's the saying is Ananasio needs to loosen up his wallet and invest more. There's nobody who's saying like, well, we don't want to throw good money after bad. He should really teach those Brewers a lesson by paying them less.
Yes, we should cut salaries, right? Yeah.
Right, exactly. So why are our kids any different? I think it's a cop-out for folks who just don't want to fund other kids. I think that for the most part, people, when you have the conversation about what a community is and how a community should be taken care of, you want every child in that community to be taken care of, because you're going to interact with them on some level, whether that be at a grocery store, whether that be them making your food, whether that be somebody that you're going to work for someday. You want everyone to have a base level of civic understanding, of critical thinking skills, and the ability to be able to make good decisions throughout their life. It's part of a social contract in a state, and it's a minimum standard for what we should do. If you're not doing that, like, what, you know, can you really say you give a damn about your neighbor if you're not willing to make sure that their kids have a quality education?
Yeah, and that to me is the most interesting thing, right? Is if you're not unwilling to invest in education, where would you be willing to invest? And I think you hit on it, like the sheer number of referendums that came out, not just building referendums, operating referendums, you know, just to get enough money to keep the school open, you know, fix the air conditioning and the heating and all the other things that need fixing. You know, one of the
234, things, a record. There was a record. 234 referendums.
Yeah, and it's only going up. One of the things I saw, though, is Milwaukee County was able to, I think, take a step back and be able to advocate for the understanding that all counties were under fiscal pressure in order to get the sales tax passed. Is there some way to sort of bring every school district together to say, hey, we really need this funding? Because it doesn't seem like there's necessarily one voice right now. And maybe that's just me, but is there a way to get sort of a unified voice to say that we're at a critical juncture here and we need to do something different?
I think it's happening. Honestly, Tom, I think it's happening. You're right that everyone was kind of divided in their own fiefdoms, right? And you hear this saying from all the different school districts kind of in whispered, hushed tones that if we don't pass this referendum, then we're going to be less attractive as a place to raise a family, to attract people to live here, to attract businesses, et cetera. And I think people started to realize, wait a second, every school district is saying this because every school district is being underfunded, particularly the rural schools. And now there's danger of another school district closing that was announced today. And on top of that, like, the superintendent of public instruction, her name is Jill Underley. She finished one term. She's running for another term. And she is running on a bold agenda to be able to say, we need to make sure that they get to 90% reimbursement because it helps rural schools. It helps urban schools. It helps suburban schools. And on top of that, it helps lower property taxes because otherwise people have to fund it on their own.
Yep. And all great points. I know we got to head out to another break. Chris, I know we talked a little bit about education. I want to talk a lot more about education. I also want to talk about some of the other things that might be able to happen, including marijuana legislation and legalization coming up. So keep on listening. This is the Maggie Dawn Show.
.5 The Tap.
CBS News Brief. A longtime Trump ally is chosen by the president-elect to be the next attorney general. The announcement about Pam Bondi comes after former Congressman Matt Gaetz withdrew his name from consideration. CBS's Jake Rosen.
Bondi was the first woman to serve as Florida's attorney general, spending 8 years in the role after working as an assistant state attorney in Hillsborough County, Florida.
CBS's Nicole Killian has more on a newly released police report showing that Pete Hegseth was accused of sexual assault.
Vice President-elect J.D. Vance played host to Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth on Capitol Hill just as the news broke of a graphic newly released police report that detailed Hegseth's involvement in an alleged sexual assault in 2017.
After a statewide recount, Democratic Pennsylvania Senator Bob Casey concedes to his Republican challenger.
I just called Dave McCormick to congratulate him on his election to represent Pennsylvania in the United States Senate.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Bucks basketball tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks host the Indiana Pacers tonight at Fiserv Forum. It's an NBA Cup game. The Bucks hoping to improve their record during this homestand. They're 6-9 right now. Giannis Antetokounmpo.
There's 67 games left. You know, 67 games left. We're trending towards the right direction. We're winning at home, right? We've lost one game at home or two games. Two games at home. It's good. It's not that bad. At the end of the day, we have a lot of season left.
College hoops, the Badgers men's team in Orlando to take on Central Florida. NFL, the Packers say that Jair Alexander has been dealing with a torn PCL in his right knee, suffered in a game 3 weeks ago. The Packers host the 49ers on Sunday. College football, the Badgers on the road to face Nebraska in their first game since firing offensive coordinator Phil Longo.
Regardless of who's actually calling the plays, the progression is how you continue to evolve the offense in particular for what best fits Wisconsin.
That's Wisconsin head coach Luke Fickell. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. If the Academy Awards have any meaning at all, they will nominate Denis Villeneuve for Best Director for Dune 2. Those are the words of actor Josh Brolin, who seems serious, adding he might quit acting altogether if his friend is not nominated for Best Director. Yeah, me too. The first Dune received 10 Oscar nominations in 2022, but not for Best Director, which obviously does not sit well with the No Country for Old Men actor. Thespians do tend to be a bit dramatic, but I hope Brolin doesn't quit acting. He's pretty good at it. Those of you who are shower indifferent, love camping in mud, and would like a shot at a serious injury might be interested to know that headliners for 2025's Coachella have been announced. Lady Gaga, Green Day, Post Malone, and Travis Scott will perform, and there will be an appearance by Yo Gabba Gabba. Can't hardly wait to not attend. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Cloudy skies for the overnight. Northwest winds still gusting up around 25 as our lows drop to the mid-30s. On your Friday, look for mostly cloudy skies. Our afternoon highs will top out in the lower 40s. And by afternoon, northwest winds 5 to 10. It's 42 at our studios.
The Todd Alba Show.
Trevi Olson, senior advisor at the Lincoln Project.
We as individuals need to be far better in terms of getting the tools we need to have the conversations. You're never going to shame someone out of their political beliefs.
Yes.
You're never going to get them with talking points.
You nailed it. And I think that that's what some of our friends on the left don't get. And I think it's destructive and it's not beneficial.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Matt Nair on air.
And we are here with Matt Randolph, Mr. Global. Donald Trump now will be coming in for a second term. There has been talk of removing sanctions from Russia. What would that mean, Matt, for the oil and gas industry?
So it depends on what Russia does, but we've seen nothing to suggest that they want to have anything to do with lowering oil prices.
And so the prices are essentially going to stay the same?
In all likelihood, yes.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Maggie Dawn.
I'm closing out my conference at which I'm speaking, so you've got another great guest host. You'll be joined by Matt Rothschild. He'll be in the chair. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. Mm-hmm.
Welcome back. This is the Maggie Dawn Show with your guest host, Tom Palswitz, and my special guest for the next half hour, State Senator Chris Larson. Before we get into it, the phone lines are open. So 855-75-CIVIC, that's 855-752-4842. So if you got something to ask myself or Chris or just want to talk, give us a call. So, Chris, I know we were touching on education. We touched a little bit on healthcare. What do you think is the next major issue, you think, from a statewide standpoint that could see the light of day or you will be caucusing for?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, there's a ton. I will say one of the big ones that I'm going to be focused on is on having common sense gun laws. Given my best friend died by suicide just about 2 weeks ago, and one of the last things he did as a state legislature is talking about how we needed to have the 48-hour waiting period for handgun purchases. And having ERPO extreme risk protection orders laws in place to make sure that people who are at risk to themselves or others are not going to be at risk to themselves or others with a firearm. So those are things that he advocated for, and having a conversation with his mother, Phyllis. I know that she's been talking to legislators, and that's one where these are common sense changes. They save lives. They don't save every life in every instance, but they do end up giving time. 85% of gun suicides are and attempts end up being successful. These are mostly men that are doing it, whereas other methods that are less successful, people end up recovering from, but you don't get that option with a firearm. So we've lost two legislators now, or legislators or former legislators from this in just the last few years. So hopefully this is fresh on folks' minds to be able to say, hey, this is just a common sense one that we can get through. So
yeah,
I've sent a letter to every legislator in the that was elected on last Tuesday. So
excellent.
We'll see how they respond.
Yeah, and of course you're talking about Waukee City Alderman Jonathan Brostoff. And Jonathan, I just have a quick story on Jonathan of my own. First time I ran for Congress, my campaign manager knew Jonathan really well, and he said you gotta sit down and talk to Jonathan because he's going to be able to give you some really good tips about what you should concentrate on, especially out in that red Waukesha area. And I just remember him grilling me. And part of it was, I think he thought maybe I was like a Republican, but he wanted to really drill in and get my bona fides to say, is this guy really a Democrat or not? And we found so much common ground. But what I really liked was the way he thought, but more importantly, how much he was willing to stand up for what's important. So, Chris, I just want to say, I think this is an excellent thing to rally people around at this point, because it's fresh in people's minds. It should be, at least. And it's the one, maybe one good thing that could come out of this is helping potential other people not end up in the same place. So appreciate that. So what else? I mean, there's a whole bunch of other, you know, statewide issues. I alluded to marijuana. Like, where are we at as a state? Because I think Robin Voss has even talked about maybe medical marijuana or anything else. But, you know, when you think about our state, we're surrounded by legalized states.
Yeah.
And it's foolish to think that people from this state aren't going to other states.
Well, they absolutely are. They have the data. They rub it in our face all the time.
Yes.
The governor of Illinois is like, thanks, guys. Thanks for coming down. He you know, what's his name? Pritzker. He gave a speech I was at last year, and he was like, thanks, guys. Good to see you on your own home turf. You know, luckily he couldn't talk too much smack because he's a Bears fan. So
right.
they take a lot of our cash as a result of that. People crossing over the border there, people crossing into Michigan.
Yes.
It's now legal for medical in Iowa, and then under certain circumstances in Minnesota. As far as the Midwest goes, there's only one other state that hasn't done this. It's us and Mike Pence's Indiana.
Yes.
Everyone else has figured this out. And as a result, it's still illegal in our state. The fines have been greatly reduced in Milwaukee, but this is still 52% of drug arrests on the most recent data are marijuana possession charges. So this is still something people are getting picked up for, 12,882 in 2022. So people are getting picked up for this when there's so many other things that people should be.
So many. Yes.
They should be spending their time on this. It's diverting resources away from where they should be spent. And of course, the impacts of this are not divided equally among the races. This is something that is used to target friends in the minority community. this is just ridiculous, right? And we're missing tons of revenue as a result. We're missing the opportunity cost of all those people who suddenly have criminal records or having trouble to be able to find a job and operate, to be able to get housing. You just exacerbate so many problems. And frankly, the rest of the country has not fallen apart at the seams, despite there being some great efforts by the anti-marijuana crowd. I mean, they're still trying to screen the Reefer Madness movie. They still had some folks at the Capitol as recently as 2 years ago talking about how this leads to psychosis. But this is a hugely minority opinion. And frankly, you have 24 other states where it is recreationally legal and 38 states where medical is appropriate. Is acceptable. And those states are not falling apart at the seams. If anything, they're doing just fine.
Yeah, and they're taking in lots of money. So all these things you mentioned are fact-based points that the Republicans still have not moved from their position, even when confronted with these fact-based points. What is the next talking point to help them come around?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think this is one where political gravity kicking in should help, because 63% of voters want this, including a majority of Republicans in our state, according to the last Marquette poll that asked this in February. So this is one where before they could kind of shake their heads and be pious and say, not for me. We're gonna pass. This is one where they should be listening to the public, because it's just dumb. It's just dumb that we're not moving in this direction. And if anything, if there's a worry about the alcohol lobby of the Tavern League, look, you can look at other states. This is something where we shouldn't end up barring one over the other. People obviously shouldn't, the people who are doing this should do it in the comfort of their own home and not be out on the streets driving.
Yes.
Which is the real problem, which is why we should be doing something more about drunk driving. I would hope that we're not the last state to move forward in this direction. I was a proud co-sponsor of this bill every session. I wish that some of the Republicans in their whispered tones in the Capitol get the courage this next session to speak up and sign on and move this forward, because if it actually comes to a vote, I think it's going to be lopsided. I think you'll have a few Republicans who will finally jump on board, but they're dragging their feet. They have these silly sessions. I think one of them did a hearing. Do you remember this on 420?
Yes.
Last year, like when we were out of session, it was like, what are you doing?
Man? What are you doing?
We know you're not going to do anything.
Thanks for the, the political theater, the political show, but you're not going to do anything about it. So, given that, because you've talked about healthcare, you've talked about education, you've talked about gun violence prevention. Now we've talked about marijuana. These issues, I think, every single poll I've ever seen, a majority of Wisconsinites agree about something should be done, and sometimes agree on exactly what should be done. At what point do those arguments start to filter into the assembly in the state Senate now that things are closer? And maybe not only for this 2 year cycle, but maybe the next 2 year cycle, because there's a lot more at risk Republicans who are going to have to have something to prove and have to find some courage to break away from the way things were. So do you have any glimpse into that? Are there any back channel talkings about maybe things will be a little bit different in this go around?
I mean, we're going to see, we'll find out. The committee assignments haven't been announced just yet. And so we don't even know who's all going to be on. We don't know what the committees are. We don't know who's going to be on which committees. We don't know how much we're going to be meeting. I do think that the Senate is a more rational chamber, and you can actually have people who have conversations. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the Assembly, there are folks who are still clinging to grudges from over a decade ago, and like that's impeding their ability to just respond to their constituents. I would say this is an era, right? Especially at the federal level, we're going to get frustrated the more you pay attention. Every news alert is just like a punch in the ear.
Yes.
This is a chance where, there's hope in Wisconsin because we have courts that actually recognize the law, not in favor of one party over another, but fairly. The legislature is getting fairer. It'll probably go through. Democrats can win the majority in both houses next session. And then you have a Democrat as governor. So you actually have some call for sanity, and we have a surplus to be able to invest in the things that have been ignored for too long. So that's it, just keeping whatever those issues are, and people are thinking of what's important to them. they should contact their legislators about them. You know, healthy school meals for all is one of the easiest ones that should pass. It is literally just making sure that kids have enough to eat for breakfast and lunch so that they can actually operate.
You think that one would be a no-brainer, but there'll probably be a little bit of a fight. But yeah, you know, one of the things, you know, that's interesting is you now have 10 new assembly people and 4 new state senators coming in without mm-hmm. the baggage of the past. How do you use that? How do you help them maybe create a voice and try to create some relationships where maybe it was hard for a guy like you who's been around for a while to break through that? You know, is there anything that you can help them do, or do you see some hope there because they're coming in without that past and they can maybe get something done?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of them are coming in here with the expectation you can actually get things done. And that is common, right? That people come in, they campaign on those, the things that should be happening. And, you know, we had a caucus once already. I've talked to the new 4 Democrats who are coming in a couple of times, you know, during the campaign and since then, and how they're setting up their offices, of how they're going to be focusing on some of the issues that were brought up during the campaign. And you can hear the fight. You can hear when there's things coming up that lobbyists are asking for, and they're like, okay, I don't know what that is. I'm not sure where that's going to go. But when you actually ask, what are people asking at the doors? What do you actually want to see happen? And the passion about, you know, making sure that healthcare is more affordable. Again, public education funding is a huge one. That's not just a talking point, but it's one that people are seeing viscerally with their kids. You know, doing more to fund the arts is one that somebody brought up. We're 50th in the country for arts funding,
yes,
which obviously spreads to our creative market. We could be doing a heck of a lot better on that. Preservation of natural resources, of making sure that those things are preserved for the next generation. We've been moving in the wrong direction for that for a long time on those. But you know, there's a long list of things that have been languishing for years.
Yeah.
And now's a chance for the public to actually be heard.
And I'll throw one more into that bucket: regional transportation in the Milwaukee area. You know, I live in Waukesha. We go to Milwaukee a lot. I know there's a lot of people that go from Milwaukee to the outlying counties on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. I read once, and this was a while ago, there were 60,000 people that every day went from Waukesha County into Milwaukee County and vice versa. So there was this big movement of people. And, you know, every time I go downtown, my wife is sick of me saying this and hearing it, but there should be a train right between the eastbound and westbound 94 lanes. There should be a train right there to move people. So what are the chances of regional transportation having some kind of, I guess, play or impact here in the next 2 years?
Over the next 2 years, it's going to be tough. Just because I know it's something Republicans aren't that big of fans of. And then the transportation secretary designee, Mr. Road Rules himself, even though he's from Wisconsin, I'm not sure he is going to allocate dollars for smart transit, of being able to say, hey, you know, a lot, even if you just don't look at the historical preferences of people wanted this for a long time, just look in the other cars while you're driving along. Everyone's looking at their damn phone.
Oh my goodness.
No one wants to be driving. If they have someone else that can drive everybody, they're doing us all a great service. This is literally a public service to keep those people from getting into accidents because they're looking at their darn phone the whole time. They don't want to be driving.
While they're driving. I know. I see it all the time too. And it's, do you think there is a way to start getting some kind of group together to start thinking about it? And I'm gonna plant that question because we got to go to a break here.
Sure.
Because I think, at least for me, Milwaukee's the heartbeat of Wisconsin, and when your heart isn't working the way it needs to, everything else is impacted. So I think it's important to understand, like, how do we make Milwaukee County really thrive? And by doing that, transportation, education, healthcare, all those things come together, and that helps out everybody. So you are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. It is your guest host, Tom Palswitz, and my special guest, State Senator Chris Larson. The number is 855-752-4842. Let's hear from you.
You
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap Eau Claire, Chippewa Valley's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Werzer Builders invites you to discover easy living in their 55-plus senior condos conveniently located on Eau Claire's south side in the Timber Bluff neighborhood development. Enjoy quality custom units with well-thought-out floor plans, kitchens with center islands and granite countertops, charming front porches, and outdoor patios with pergolas. Units are two-bedroom, two-bath, come complete with appliances, and start in the 270s. Contact Werzer Builders today for lot availability and building details at info@werzerbuilders.com.
When severe weather hits and the power goes out, do you have a plan? For reliable power and peace of mind, propane can do that. It only takes about 10 seconds for a propane-powered generator to restore power to your home. So no matter what Mother Nature has in store, you know you're prepared. Learn more at WIPGA.org. This message is sponsored by your local propane provider and the Wisconsin Propane Education and Research Council.
Diabetes, high blood pressure, anxiety meds, everyone's on them. If you're a 50-year-old male, maybe a bit porky, and you may even have type 2 diabetes, $1 million of term insurance may only cost you about $200 a month. Call Term Provider. Speak with Big Lou at 800-230-2777. Big Lou will find a term life policy for you even if you have type 2 diabetes, are overweight, or have high blood pressure. Term Provider has helped thousands of people like you who think they can't afford term life insurance. To buy $1 million of affordable term life for you, all you need to do is call Big Lou at 800-230-2777. Lou will make sure the scales are tipped in your favor. Call 800-230-2777. Big Lou will answer your call and work to fit you into a term life policy that you can afford. Remember, Big Lou's like you. He's on meds too. Call 800-230-2777, 800-230-2777, or biglou.com.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. This is your guest host, Tom Palswitz, with my special guest, State Senator Chris Larson. We were just touching on Milwaukee County. I know, Chris, you grew up in Milwaukee County. You went to high school in Milwaukee County. You went to your secondary education in Milwaukee County. What are the things that can be done in the Milwaukee 7 that you think you can influence from the state level that could really create a much better economy and environment that would go toward helping the rest of the state? What are some of those things?
Yeah, I mean, one of the big ones is making sure the college is more accessible and more affordable. So obviously we talked about K-12 public education, but I do think higher education is one where it is, it's a pillar of what makes Wisconsin, Wisconsin.
Yes.
When people think of our state, they think of us as being one where education is valued all across the board, but particularly in our colleges. And I think making it more affordable, more accessible is key. There's a lot of folks who are deciding not to go, and I think we need to turn that around due to the cost. There's just been this idea where we can keep charging more and more and more, the state cutting their share of the funding and then assuming that loans are going to fill up the difference. Well, a lot of people are realizing that the loans are way too high, even though they're giving them this money. It turns out it's not free.
It's not free, yes.
Right. And they're, you know, like, despite efforts at the federal level to be able to extinguish student loan debt so that an entire generation can be unleashed and unburdened by it, that has languished. So I think changing that is going to be a magnet to attracting working professionals to the state. And I would also include in that, right, technical education, of making sure that continues to be, it's more of a bang for its buck already, but making sure that's maintained. There is more dedicated funding for that, comes from the local property tax, but making sure that that's available and still not out of reach for folks, I think, is going to be huge. I mean, honestly, I'd love to see a huge marketing campaign to be able to sell Milwaukee to the rest of the country, especially considering the last election results of if we can just figure out how to get about 22,000 people to move to Milwaukee, you know, from other parts of the country. If you like, you know, great underdog sports teams that where you can actually be an owner. I've got my certificate up here.
Right. You can own an NFL team. The housing is affordable. You have a great park system. I mean, the things go on and on. One of the things I always think about, though, you know, I have three grown children and two of them have moved away. And I can't fault them for doing it because the opportunities and the advantages they can get someplace else. But they can't buy housing anywhere else. And I think that's one of the things that we can offer to people, especially young people, to get into a home and become part of a neighborhood and become part of the fabric of that community. I think that's something that we could do. Chris, I know that, you know, I've said before, you've been in Madison for a while. Do you feel like the next, let's call it 6 to 8 years, could be a dramatic difference? Or do you feel like we're still in for more of the same? When it comes to Madison,
it should be. But honestly, there's things that can happen, right? And I feel like one of the reasons that I continue to stay in the state senate and have for all these years is I have a lot of the institutional memory of what it was like when I got there, of the things that I had hoped to do when I was getting into office, and then frankly, just how we have shifted away from what the priorities actually should be, what the public wants. And where it is now, where and money, the influence of money in our state has ended up shifting things so far to the right, and just listening to what big business wants as being the priority, while not doing public hearings or ignoring, you know, your base. And unfortunately, that definitely falls on partisan lines in some cases, but not all, right? And so even the influence of money means that lobbyists are suddenly become a lot friendlier with Democrats and hoping that they can tap the brakes on actually changing the things that would actually fundamentally help the public. So I say that, and I think it's worth talking about over the next 2 years, because we may end up getting the majority, but that doesn't necessarily mean that anything is going to pass or change unless you elect the right type of leaders who are talking about issues that matter to you. About public education, healthcare affordability, of moving forward on regional transit authorities, of reversing the harms that have attacked unions, increasing the minimum wage, making it easier to join a union, making it easier to make sure that you are earning what you deserve, making sure that our parks are invested in a way that you have a higher quality of life. All of those things, the things that we've discussed, the things that have been discussed for the last 10 years, that's what's going to be determined, and we need to start talking about it now. Granted, the Republicans might not pass it, but that needs to be an agenda. We cannot, this last election, there's a lot of lessons, Tom, right?
Yes.
One of them should definitely be, we cannot just be the opposite of what Donald Trump is. We cannot just be the fallback to that. We actually have to chart a clear course, and that'll determine if things change, or that'll determine if it's just the change of the name at the top, but no laws change.
Right. And I think it, like I said before, it's a unique opportunity to possibly get things done that haven't been possible before. I am particularly excited by Angelito Tenorio, who won the 14th district. Angelito worked on my campaign in 2018, and it's nice to see him have a seat at the table in the assembly representing West Dallas. So I think that'll be great for Milwaukee County, and I know it'll be great for West Dallas. So, Chris, want to thank you. Appreciate you having on and taking some time out of your busy schedule. I know with a whole bunch of stuff going on, and take care. And we're going to be watching to see if there's some movement, which I think will be fantastic. So thanks for coming on.
Thanks.
And as we head out, I think one of the things I just want to end with is going back to a democracy, if you can keep it. So figure out what you can do. Figure out what you can do for yourself and figure out what you can do for your community. So thanks for listening. And Maggie will be back soon.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Up North News Radio.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Dan Schaefer will be here from the Recombobulation area, also Civic Media's political editor, and as always, we'll wrap it up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10. The Dom Salvia Show.
State Senator-elect Jody Habesh-Sinikin. What's the best way, do you think, it is to approach a difference in not just opinion, but in what we perceive as facts with those that may not be aware or don't agree with it?
First, having a conversation. Try to get an understanding of what is really bothering them and try to offer solutions at the state level or at the local level where there can be progress.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228 EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.